Hello, it's Jack Winstanley here along with Jack Ranson, and we're here with Pat Nevin. Thank you very much for joining us, Pat.
Yeah, absolutely great to be here. Well, I think it is great to be here and doing the debate, so I'll tell you afterwards whether it's great or not.
Are you looking forward to the debate?
I'm really looking forward to it. Oddly enough, I did this odd thing where I've been quite busy of late, so I gave 2 days to prep it, and I got ill yesterday. Very ill. And I actually couldn't move out of my bed. I took a reaction to some jabs I had going to Brazil. So yesterday I had rabies, cholera, and a wee bit of dengue, I think, and yellow fever, and I reacted very badly to it, so I'm winging it a wee bit tonight.
You look slightly better now though. Is it better today?
Oddly enough, at 7 o'clock this morning I was thinking about getting a doctor. I went to make a phone call and I couldn't get my arm up, but within 2 hours it went off, so I'm recovering on a wee bit tired because I haven't slept for a day or two. But anyway,
so I'm right in thinking you were quite a big Celtic fan as a youngster.
I was very good. I can see where you're going with this. Yes, I was brought up mad keen Celtic fan. Whole family were big Celtic fans, and used to go and watch them all the time, and was fortunate enough to sign for them as a schoolboy until I was 16, until they kicked me out and said, "You're too small, you're never going to make it." I slightly proved them wrong with that one. But yeah, I was fanatical, and even during my playing career, I was a big Celtic fan, and you know, always wanted to go and, you know, they actually tried to buy me 3 times, and for a variety of reasons, it never happened. Never my reasons, I always wanted to go. So yeah, Celtic was my absolute first love, but I did change. I'd done the unthinkable, and I changed. Yeah. I swapped teams.
And when Celtic said to you, "You're too small, you're never going to make it," did they sit you down and tell you that, or was it more of they just never took you on?
There was 2 guys, and one of them was dead nice about it. It was a guy called Jimmy Lumsden, who recently was the assistant manager at Manchester United until a couple of weeks ago. And Jimmy just came up to me and he said, "Look, son, you're a clever lad. Go and get your studies. Stick in at your studies. You're not going to make it." And I wasn't really that bothered, because I'd never really thought of being a footballer. I just did it for the enjoyment, the pure fun of it, the love of it. So I did. I took his word. And I agreed with him totally. So I went and did about 6 months of a degree, and then got picked up part time for Clyde. So I was able to carry on a degree and play part time as well. And for 2 years, that's exactly what I did. And then I took a 2 year sabbatical to try it professionally. And never went back to do the degree. So it's still a year, I never ever finished it.
You worked under Craig Brown at Clyde.
Well, he was the guy that found me. I was playing in a bounce game, and a mate of mine and I were playing against his team, and we thought it was the Clyde reserves, but it turned out it was Clyde first team. And I was playing for this boys club, and we beat them. This under 18s boys club. But me and my mate who were playing, we had a bet beforehand, a 50p or 10 bob as it was, bet, saying who can score, who can dribble around the most players and score. And I think I went around about 4 or 5 of them and scored. And as I was walking up, off Craig Brown said, "Do you fancy playing for Clyde?" And I went, "Nah, I'm not. I'm studying." And he said, "Well, you people wouldn't understand this, right? Modern students wouldn't understand this." But he said, "What's your grant?" So I used to get a grant at the time. And I told him, and he says, "Well, we'll match that for your wages."
Wow.
Where do I sign? Give me that pen right now. So that was it. So I started, and within a year and a half, or nearly 2 years of that, I was player of the year at Chelsea. This is stunning, from being a student, not thinking of playing football. And oddly, and this is the real thing about it, it made me a better player to do the studying, because I knew I had a backup. So you weren't playing with fear. If you play through love of something, you'll do anything through love of it, you will be better than you do it through fear. Through fear of, you know, having the money or whatever. So it was the best thing that ever happened to me. So Celtic getting rid of me. Thanks, guys.
Because you were player at the year at Chelsea in your first season there, and you worked under John Neil there, and you were signed in the summer of a raft of signings into a new look Chelsea side, and then you got promoted in the first season. How was it moving to Chelsea, moving down south and out of Scotland?
Well, I was a City boy anyway, so I'm from Glasgow anyway, so going to London was fine. The Chelsea fans were just so nice to me at the time. But to be fair, the saviour was a number of things. Chelsea fans were a saviour to me because, as I say, they gave me Player of the Year and various things. But I was a big muso as well. So, you know, the music scene was fantastic around about then. I actually started writing for the NME then, under a pseudonym. Yeah. So there weren't many Premier League footballers writing for the NME or the music press at the time. So the bands were fantastic. So I was going to see a lot of bands. Theatre's great down there, you know, and things that I was interested in. And the great thing about it is you would get fined as a player if you went out to a nightclub or whatever that. No one's going to find you at a Jesus and Mary jingle gig on a Friday night. No one's going to see you. It's just not going to get back to the manager. So I could do whatever I wanted, really. But I was very professional about it. I was really dedicated to the fitness side of it. And I didn't drink a lot. So if I went out to see a gig on a Friday night, I was still okay for Saturday. Yeah. That was fine. So all those things, it wasn't a trouble for me at all. I was up for moving to London. And London's a great city.
Yeah.
And I deliberately decided to live in the centre. So I lived in the centre of London, whereas all the rest of the players lived out in kind of sticks.
Yeah.
Hey, I was 19. I was not vaguely interested in living in St Albans. Nothing against St Albans, but I went to London.
And you kind of experienced both ends of the sword, should we say, at Chelsea. You got promoted in your first season there, and unfortunately Chelsea were relegated in your last season there before you moved to Everton. How was it experiencing both sides?
Well, it was torture, but it was a very odd thing for me, because the last season with Chelsea, I knew I was leaving anyway, for a big, long variety of reasons. I'd like to have stayed, but, you know, I think they needed the money. I was worth a few quid for them. Also, the style of the team had changed, very much a kick-and-rush style, which really didn't suit me at all. I'd already just organised. I was going to Paris Saint-Germain. It was all organised. That never turned out in the end, because Everton came in at the last minute and kind of eventually chose them. So I knew I was leaving, but it still was torture getting beaten at the end of the season and getting relegated, because we weren't a bad side. But the style of football that we'd taken on was awful. Yeah. It wasn't working and it didn't suit the team. And the real sadness was I couldn't tell the fans why I was leaving, because I just didn't want to have an argument with anyone. I just, look, I've had 5 years there, thanks guys, it was brilliant. I'm going to do something else now. I'm not going to abuse anybody and say you treated me terribly. It's awful. Look, thanks, it was great. They've not offered me a new contract. They need the money. I'm off. Fair enough. And I've never had a bad moment, and funnily enough, all the teams I play for, I've never had a bad feeling for any of them, and all that's in any of the ones I've left, because, you know, you do something, you do a job, don't be rancorous about life. It's not fair sometimes. You just have to enjoy the best of it you can. I've got a very positive attitude towards it.
Well, following on from that, when you said you've never had a bad feeling, because I was kind of interested how you think money's kind of ruined sport, because obviously you're on the proposition. I don't know whether that's money that has contributed to that kind of, because there's a lot of sometimes in bickering in football nowadays. So I don't know whether that's money or just you as a person.
I think you're subtly suggesting a political bent to it as well. And yes, there is maybe slightly that for me. I'm slightly of the left. But it's not really that. I mean, that I will try to make the points tonight that there are certain things that have been lost in sports. And with the advent of huge finances coming in, one of them is integrity. In the simplest form, cheating. It's proportional, the amount of cheating that increases with the amount of money that's involved in any sport. Now, it's not the case where, you know, when I was playing, you know, no one cheated, and it's just since Johnny Foreigner came in. That's not the case. There was some, certainly at the time, some people diving about, but it certainly has gone absolutely berserk in the last number of years, and since the advent of the Premier League. And I don't think it is foreign players necessarily. I think it's the increase of monies that have been involved in the game. And as soon as something becomes that big a business, you know, you get professionalism, inverted commas, And people will do anything to win, because they're not doing it for the glory anymore. They'll tell you they are, but it's the money, you know. And you look around as many sports as you like. I mean, why did Lance Armstrong do what he did? Was it because of the glory, or was it because of the money? Do you know what the wee giveaway is? Have a look at their shirts.
Yeah.
There's a wee bit of advertising on there. So I think integrity, the honesty in sport, the fact, Corinthian spirit, which I always had, still have, it's there. And it never stopped me. I recently was doing a television programme with Robbie Savage. And I said to him, well, I've managed to play 750 professional games and never dived once. And he almost fell off his chair. He said, what? You did what? You never dived once? I said, no. What? Why would I? And that's how much it has changed. Mm. That, I mean, I'm not the strongest, biggest bloke you've ever seen in your life, and I was one of the creative types. So you'd expect me to be one that was throwing himself about a bit. No, I never dived once. Never once. And I can say that with great comfort. But you couldn't say that now. And they've taken that Corinthian spirit out of the game. And it's not just football, it's so many other sports. I mean, it's, I suppose we say it's just not cricket to behave that way. Mm-hmm. Well, cricket isn't cricket anymore, because people don't walk anymore when they get a neck, when they know they've got a neck.
Yeah.
So even cricket, the classic gentleman sport, that isn't, that's lost it. Now, you got to tell me that lost it because of someone else coming into the sport, because the Aussies playing, or because of... No, it's because of finances. Mm. And you know, I could go through many of them, and certainly I will later. I mean, I would ask you how many of the last 100 metre Olympic champions you believe in that you don't think have been in some way involved in drugs at some point. Many, if not most, if not all, have been caught. So does that not destroy what sport was initially about? So, you know, that's a couple of ways. And there are many other ways, I think, you know, that the sport... I mean, I think the money involved in sport has taken certainly some of the personality of and the relationships between, you know, the people and the sportsmen away. I mean, if one of the players just drives past you in a blacked-out Bentley, goes back to his gated home and will only talk to you if there's a, you know, if there's an angle to sell some Nike boots... I mean, come on, it's changed a wee bit, and I think that's changed for the worst person.
Could, I mean, playing devil's advocate, is there an argument though to be had that sort of big money signings like Bale going to Madrid, that kind of thing, is almost good for development of a player? Is money, does money have like a role to play?
If you want me to make the argument pro, I can make that one too. I'll do that. Sadly, I'm on the other side tonight. Yeah, of course I could make that argument. Yeah, and I think you could make that argument. The monies that are in, people would say to you, facilities have improved phenomenally. Coaching for young kids improved absolutely phenomenally. Just talking about football. I mean, if you go around any town and city in this country, I think you will see 3G and 4G pitches everywhere for the kids to learn. And the quality of coaches is better. And that's why the English national team, the Scottish national team, have dominated world football for the past 20 years. That was sarcasm, that last bit, right? Okay. So, some of the times you think it's... some of the positives that you think are there, you dig a wee bit deeper, and I'm not convinced they're all positives. I mean, people tell me that the lottery funding has been nothing but good. Because have a look at the Olympics, have a look at the medals. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's all right, but say you're involved in a minority sport like badminton. Your lottery funding has just been cut massively because you didn't medal. Is that not a wee bit counterproductive? And wait a minute, so we're not trying to create new sportsmen. All we're doing is rewarding success and short-termism towards gold medals. If you're going through a fallow period, then you don't get the chance to go and re-energise your sport because your funding's been slashed. It's short. I mean, we're in Cambridge here. I mean, a great centre of science. One thing Cambridge has found out, and other great universities have found out, don't spend your time, if you're a scientist, involved in getting your peer-reviewed paper in, you know, I don't know, PNAS or whatever, you know, nature or whatever. Go and do the work and be given time and space to do the work, because that's where creativity and innovation comes. If you chase, you know, getting published every 2 minutes, which some people have done, you're not going to get the great, you know, jumps forward. You get the great jumps forward because you allow innovators time and space. And I think we've been a bit short-termist in sport. I think there's a real analogy between the two.
I had a question, obviously, as a you've done a few DJ sets, mm-hmm. and I know that you're a fan of Joy Division and more sort of underground kind of music. I mean, obviously, there's a question of money, whether that's good for sport, but would some more sort of Joy Division, more, would that be good for sport?
I think if it was Joy Division, I think it'd be depressing people a wee bit too much. But a wee bit of Bill and Sebastian wouldn't go amiss. Funnily enough, I used to try and get the music stuff into the teams a little bit and try a little bit of education there. It didn't really work, to be fair. It never really worked. But oddly, I mean, this is the biggest, the oddest thing, because I came from a different background. I came from an educational background. I was always an outsider. I spent nearly 20 years in the sport, a total and utter outsider. I voyeuristically used to watch these people who I thought were weird because of the way they acted, and I thought I was the normal one. But once you're in the bubble, my nickname for years was Weirdo, because I like music, theatre, the arts, and I was saying, no guys, you don't understand, I'm normal. You lot are all weird. So a wee bit of music, but possibly something slightly cheerier than Joy Division. Yeah. That's for doing it on your own.
Well, thank you very much, Pat and Evan, from both of us. It's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Absolute pleasure.